I saw, when I saw that, this guy at the, well, I don't know if it was the pulpit or some important place there inside the building. Well, he has, it's indigenous stuff that he's wearing. And I saw Michael Moore, he said, that's a Viking helmet. But it's not a Viking helmet. And he also says that he's a shaman and things like that. How is that received in the indigenous scene?
Well, for the tribes that have the buffalo bison in their culture, it's extremely disrespectful for him to do that. That
right.
Only certain, you know, only certain people would wear that, and it would be earned. He was also wearing coyote fur, which I'm not sure how many. I mean, he shouldn't be wearing any of that stuff. They're all indigenous animals in the Americas, and are highly respected or are a status symbol for Native people. So for him to just wear it as a costume is extremely disrespectful.
Right. Okay. So what's your what do you think about the future, the near future and the medium range future of Portland and America?
I don't know what to expect. The way I pictured this happening, I saw it happening, that it was going to be worse. Like this, what happened at the Capitol to me was more mild than what I feared. But we still have to get through the inauguration, and there's, you know, thousands of threats of right wingers coming to all the state capitals with assault rifles. So we have to, everyone has to be careful and mind their security, and just, that's just it. That's all we can do.
Yeah. And hope that law enforcement is better prepared or has done something and does not let them in.
Yeah.
Especially this thing of that you have this Homeland Security terrorizing right. everybody for years, and when they're needed, they're nowhere. So that's so strange.
Right. Yeah, they've arrested me 3 times just for standing in their driveway.
Yeah. Oh, that's bad. Okay. So, but this stuff you're in now. So you're in. You're doxxed for the second time with photos by Ngo, who has a book out, also on everything about Antifa and what you should know about them, and also this thing about the mayor that would have been slapped in the face. You're looking for a lawyer. Is that right?
Yes.
And it's for both these cases.
I have not been arrested for assaulting Ted Wheeler, so I'm not sure how much I'm not sure if I need a lawyer for that or not. But I need a lawyer to influence him to stop saying my name and saying that I attacked him in all the newspapers and to all the news cameras when that's not true.
Yeah. But is it a confusion? Was he hit in the face by somebody?
No, he wasn't, because I thought, that's what I thought too. I was like, well, maybe I didn't see what happened, because you don't always see what happens at protests. But that didn't happen before or after I was around, so it didn't happen at all.
That's a strange story. What a dick.
We yelled at him. We yelled at him, and then when the restaurant told us to leave, we left.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then he says he was hit. Well, it's so strange, because he's officially a police chief, but in the end, he doesn't have any power over the police, it seems. As it turned out, especially in the beginning of the protests, I can kind of remember.
Right. That's what I was saying to him, because I heard him say something about assault. And I said to him, I have videos of your police assaulting me and on the video you could see I was doing absolutely nothing. She deserved to be beat with a baton. Yeah, I don't know. He has power over the police department, but he doesn't use it. I don't know what his problem is. Maybe he is engaged in other illegal activities that makes him vulnerable to not disciplining the police. I don't know, but he doesn't do anything about the assaults we receive from police, even when we're peacefully protesting or just observing it, or just observing a protest. I've been beaten for that.
Yeah. Terrible. Yeah, so I'm almost through my questions. Do you have something to add to this small interview?
I can't think of anything right now just because I have a lot. I have a lot going on.
Yeah, right. That's right. Okay, we mentally support you. I can say that for our listeners. And it's good to hear your voice again, because I was a bit scared that something might happen to you. Yeah. Or might have happened to you in the past. So that's nice. And I hope to be speaking to you again soon. And I wish you all the power and strength to get over this bad patch.
All right. All okay. right. Thank you. Thanks
Thank you.
For having me.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Ja, dat was Koskade, een inheemse activiste uit Portland, die nu voor de tweede keer met haar privégegevens op internet is geplaatst. Omdat ze demonstreert voor Black Lives Matter en nu ook dus inderdaad wordt beschuldigd door de burgemeester dat ze hem zou hebben geslagen. Wat niet zo is. Nou ja, het slaat gewoon helemaal nergens op. Dan gaan we even vlug... Oh, sorry. Pat de Poes serieus, Germaine Tjendré. Met activisme, kunst en actualiteit. De burgemeester die wil dat er geen cannabis meer wordt verkocht aan buitenlanders. Want dan kunnen we veel minder coffeeshops hebben. En dan worden we gewoon een nettere stad. En dan krijgen we nettere toeristen. Die gewoon... Ja, denk aan een stad als Wenen. Daar komen ook hele nette mensen. Die gaan naar de opera en zijn daar toerist. Dus dat is hartstikke leuk. Maar ja, is Amsterdam Wenen? Hè, kan je je afvragen. Ik denk het niet. Maar goed, ik ga eens bellen met Ton Nabbe. Hij is criminoloog. En... Waar heb ik Ton Nabben gelaten? Oh, die zit gewoon in mijn telefoon. Oh, wat heb ik nou gedaan? Dan moet ik jacken, of hoef ik niet te jacken? Moet ik even uitzoeken. Tjongejonge, ik heb helemaal plannetjes gemaakt, maar dat zijn eigenlijk hele domme plannetjes geweest. Daar kom je dan achter, hè? Ja, oh, dat is deze. Ja, nou, ik ga ondertussen vol lullen. Dus dat plan, dat... Ja, wat is dit nou weer? Je ging Duits bellen. Ja, ik ging Duits bellen, maar dat ga ik pas veel later doen. Ik heb contact gemaakt met Duitsland. We gaan bellen met mensen die een coronablokkage gaan... iets met nog erger dan een lockdown. Een hele erge lockdown. Wacht even. Ja, als jullie nou eens even een beetje ophouden met... test. Gaan we ook testberichten sturen. Tjongejonge. Ja, maar goed. Dus wat is er aan de hand? Mevrouw Hossema die is gelovige in het, in het verschijnsel van wat ze noemen ondermijning. En ondermijning is een Nederlands product. Dat is uitgevonden door de Nederlandse politie. En het was op zich een hele slimme uitvinding. Wat hebben ze namelijk gedaan? Ze scoorden heel slecht. Het is de cijfers van inbraken worden niet opgelost. En eigenlijk alles wat de politie moet doen, dat doen ze niet of te weinig. Toen was op een gegeven moment bedacht van een boetequotum. Dat de politie moet zo en zoveel boetes minstens binnenhalen. Toen vonden mensen dat weer onrechtvaardig. Toen hebben ze de boetes zodanig verhoogd dat ze met veel minder boetes uitschrijven... ze ook evenveel geld binnen zouden halen. Dus dan is het eigenlijk nog oneerlijker geworden. Een ander ding wat ze hebben gedaan is dat ze datgene wat het allermakkelijkst is om te doen, tot prioriteit te verheffen. Dus er wordt nogal wat wiet verbouwd in Nederland en er zijn coffeeshops en die krijgen wiet aangeleverd. En dan is het eigenlijk een heel koud kunstje om als politie van die coffeeshop erachter te komen waar die wiet vandaan komt. En dan achter de wiethandel en de wietteelt aan te gaan zitten. En je ruikt dat ook heel goed. Dus dat is eigenlijk dat is makkelijk, dat lukt altijd. En toen heeft de politie bedacht, dan wordt dat onze prioriteit, want dat lukt tenminste. Nou, daar zitten we nu nog mee. En het verschijnsel ondermijning, dat komt ook in geen enkel ander land voor. Of in geen enkele taal, geen enkel ander politiekorps ter wereld gebruikt het woord ondermijning. Maar in Nederland teelt het wierig. En, teelt het wierig? Huh? Wiert het? Teelt het? Telig? Weelt het? Wildig? Tiert het welig. Aha, wilt het tier. Tiert het welig. Goed, in ieder geval is ook een stomme uitdrukking, moet je niet zeggen. Er is heel veel ondermijning zogenaamd in Nederland. En de politiek vindt het ook leuk. Dus dan wordt er weer geld voor vrijgemaakt. De Belastingdienst krijgt vrije hand. Nou, je weet, de Belastingdienst zijn hartstikke leuke, toffe mensen. Die houden van vrijheid en die zijn voor mensenrechten, maar niet heus. Het zijn ontzettend nare teringleiders die iedereen kapot maken. En dat voor de lol doen. Dat hebben we wel gezien in het toeslagenschandaal. Fijn. Ik heb wel nu een soort contact met kunnen krijgen, waarschijnlijk mogelijk met Ton Nabbe. Alleen ga ik hem nu dus WhatsApp bellen en dat weet hij niet. Ton Nabbe is criminoloog en die heeft misschien wel een idee over hoe dit zit. Hij is natuurlijk hartstikke angstig dat hij nu... Het kan ook nog dat ik toch het verkeerde nummer heb ingevoerd. Dat ik nu gewoon zomaar iemand anders aan het bellen ben. Het duurt wel heel lang, hè? Het duurt mij iets te lang. Ik ga eens even kijken of ik hem op de reguliere telefoon kan krijgen en wat er de fuck aan de hand is. Even kijken. Het gesprek gaat dan ook meteen een beetje... Ja, nu gaat hij over op die andere telefoon. Maar goed, ik was eigenlijk halverwege het verhaal, want het is een belangrijke exponent van die hele ondermijningsgedachten zijn Pieter Tops en die andere knakker, die dat boek dan schrijven, Achterkant van Nederland. En toen hebben ze voor... Ja, ik stuit gewoon op voicemail. Nou, zit ik een heel mooi verhaal te houden, dat gaat helemaal nergens heen. Hij is er niet, ik ga het anders later nog eens proberen. Maar goed, die twee hebben dus ook voor Halsema voor 50.000 een van een flutrapport geschreven dat heel mooi is afgekraakt door, wie was het ook weer, Follow the Money geloof ik. Ja, ontleed en het is gewoon echt helemaal ruk en shit. En ook als je dit verslag leest, of dat voorstel dat voor de gemeenteraad is, er worden allerlei insinuaties gedaan. Hey, ja. Ja, is dat Ton Nabbe? Hallo, mag ik even terug neerleggen en dan met WhatsApp opbellen? Ja, dat ga ik nu doen. Ik leg nu neer, ik bel nu op. Ja, tot zo. Kijk, dan komt het toch nog goed, hè? Maar dan vind ik het gek dat het weer zo lang duurt. Jongen, heb ik het nummer wel goed ingevoerd dan?
Ja, hallo?
Ja, hallo. Is dat Ton?
Ja.
Ja, hallo, je bent live in de uitzending. Aan de telefoon dus criminoloog Ton Nabbe. En ik zat de luisteraars al een beetje te vertellen dat de burgemeester van Amsterdam heeft het plan opgevat om in de toekomst, met een overgangsperiode ook, mensen die niet de Nederlandse nationaliteit hebben te verbieden om cannabis te kopen in Amsterdam.
Ja.
Wat vind je van dat plan?
Nou. Dit
feature cannot be activated because the number is outside the serving area in which the service will work.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, on occasion.
And out in the Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
Well, it's a nice, hot, steamy night here in New York. So let's try and get through this together without anyone passing out. Good story that I just saw not too long ago, and it's kind of, you know, it's one of these stories that sort of gives you renewed hope that things might be okay, that, you know what, we might get through all this and triumph in the end. You know, don't we all need a feel-good story like this? Well, okay, here it is. There is a bill in Congress, yes, Congress to the rescue, a bill that would prevent ICE from detaining or deporting U.S. citizens. Huh? Okay, who can disagree with that? Well, you'll never guess. All right, first of all, a little bit of background here. U.S. citizens, for those who don't know, aren't supposed to be deported. They're not supposed to be sent out of the country. However, there are reports, many reports, of citizens of Latino descent being detained, stopped, asked to prove citizenship, and even sent to foreign countries on occasion. Now, U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, this is your representative, Kyle. Am I pronouncing it right? Jayapal?
Yes.
Okay. Pramila Jayapal.
Yes, I said yes.
Okay, if I'm getting it wrong, it's going to be on you.
Just get to the story.
From Washington. Okay, I want to get it right. She introduced legislation to formally block Immigration and Customs Enforcement from detaining or deporting U.S. citizens. Dubbed the Stop ICE from Kidnapping U.S. Citizens Act, the bill would set penalties for ICE agents who unlawfully hold U.S. citizens and place them in immigration proceedings. It's sponsored by several other Democrats as well. And this is where it gets a little puzzling. It will likely face a long-shot bid in the GOP-controlled House. Did they maybe not read it? Did they maybe not understand what this is saying? It's saying that ICE cannot arrest U.S. citizens and subject them to immigration proceedings and possible deportation. How would you disagree with that? How would you think that is something that is at all permissible? In May, ICE briefly detained Florida-born Leonardo Garcia Venegas from his job at a construction site in Foley, Alabama. They alleged that his real ID was fake. He alleged agents forced him to his knees and handcuffed him. Immigration officials held U.S. citizens and U.S. citizen and Albuquerque resident Jose Hermosillo for 10 days in Arizona's Florence Correctional Center after arresting him, and didn't believe him when he said he was a citizen. Two U.S. citizen children in April were deported to Honduras after ICE detained their mother during a routine check-in. Now, Jayapal, in the statement, said ICE is acting like a rogue force, kidnapping and disappearing people off the streets with no due process. When ICE is conducting immigration enforcement, arresting and detaining U.S. citizens is illegal, and deporting U.S. citizens is illegal, full stop. Now, to counter this, Tricia McLaughlin, a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson, said that these recent reports are false. They're false. What I just said to you didn't happen because she said it didn't happen. They're false. Everyone say it. They're false. Fake. Didn't happen. This is how we have to live, you know, whether we like it or not. This is how the reality of the situation. Okay, so, yeah, clearly her statement is what's false. Now, in May, House Republicans killed a measure in Trump's big budget bill that would have stopped ICE from being able to deport or detain U.S. citizens. Okay, so what this tells me is that clearly the Republicans in Congress are the enemy of freedom, because if they're saying that U.S. citizens can be deported, what's left? What exactly is left that they will defend? So this bill should be voted on and passed unanimously. Instead, it's not going to pass because there are people who are elected, who have power, who believe it's okay to grab people off the street and deport them, regardless of whether or not they're a citizen. I mean, what do you think, Alex? Do I have that fairly close to interpreted right?
I think so. I mean, this is such a bizarre thing for the Republicans to oppose, but I guess it's just not beyond them to be a witherward friend to the Constitution here. I mean, this is really unbelievable in many ways. I mean, the only thing I could see being a blocker for the Republicans here could be something like, well, we want to leave it open to the government to perhaps strip people of their citizenship and then deport them. I mean, maybe that's the idea here, is that, you know, ultimately they want to retain that kind of authority and don't want to hamstring ICE from deporting U.S. citizens after their citizenship is revoked in some way. Mm-hmm. But this also raises the issue of, you know, to where would any U.S. citizen even be deported if they're a U.S. citizen? It's so mind-boggling. And obviously, ICE's ability to enforce immigration laws against U.S. citizens should be, without question, ultra vires or beyond their powers. So, you know, the whole thing is rather mystified.
Yeah, it's. I think it's time that we stop just acting bewildered and incredulous at how far they're willing to take this. Because what you say is absolutely true. Yes, they are moving to a stage where they can strip citizenship of somebody who was born here, whose parents were born here, anybody. Look, if they can go after Rosie O'Donnell, they can go after any of us, believe me. So this is something that we have to pay close attention to, because it's frightening. It's frightening. Yes, Alex?
Yeah, I think we really have to think about the evolution of the authorities of ICE. ICE was created with the Department of Homeland Security after 9/11, and it was really there to address terrorism and to deport terrorists. And then the focus was on serious crimes during the Obama administration. And then during the Trump administration, we have, you know, the expansion of these powers. They started to shrink a little bit during Biden, but now they're being massively expanded again. I mean, this is really, to bring it back into technical terms, the definition of function creep. And, you know, we need to stop this now. It's going to get out of hand. It is out of hand.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, it's absolutely out of hand. I mean, when, you know, there's a very old saying about things like this, which is like, when a single person in this country doesn't have basic human rights, nobody does, because if they come for anybody, they can come for you next. And this is no longer hyperbole. This is a thing that is happening. People are being kidnapped and disappeared, whether they're immigrants, and now, as we've seen, U.S. citizens, and there has been no accountability. ICE has deliberately thwarted any attempts to hold them accountable, to, you know, track and, you know, judge their efforts fairly. And this is absolutely terrifying. This is, and anybody who votes against this bill, I want to look at those voter rolls when this is over and when this bill is killed, because every single name that votes against this, the people represented by those people, this is being done in your name.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be aware of this. You need to relieve those people of their jobs while we still have even the dream of an ability to do so.
You know, it's interesting. This week I learned that Trump can indeed feel fear, and his cronies can as well. And it came through the whole Epstein saga. When he saw that MAGA was starting to revolt against him, it was, you know, a Nicolae Ceausescu moment, you know, where he gave the speech in Romania and all of a sudden people started to boo. And he just didn't have the capacity to interpret what that meant. And he was out of power and executed within a couple of days. Now, that's a very different situation, obviously, but it goes to show that there's a line for everybody. There's a line for everybody, and you know, if, whether it's Epstein or Elmo or ICE, there is something that is going to say, "Okay, folks, this can't stand. This is just too far gone." Now, I wanted to ask Alex something else here, because this is bothering me, bothering a lot of people. You have this paramilitary force unleashed on our streets. And it's starting to become normal, starting to be something that people almost expect to see. But if these people, and they never respond, you mentioned that there are basically, we're waiting for comments from ICE, we're waiting for statements, and they never come. If you watch any TV broadcast, any news item about an ICE raid someplace, they always have a call into ICE to get a comment, and the comment never comes. They're silent. It's like some crazy invading force that doesn't even speak human. So basically, you have this force. They wear masks. They cover their faces completely. They don't have name tags. Oftentimes, their vehicles are unlabeled. Why should you do anything these people say? You know, they have not demonstrated in any way that they have any legitimate authority. So just because somebody is shouting commands at you and they look intimidating, is that enough? Is that all it takes? Now, Alex, I'm asking you, you know, as far as when a law enforcement agency identifies themselves to somebody, you know, if a cop pulls you over, you pull over because it's a cop. They have a cop car. They have a cop uniform. They have a cop face. You know it's a cop. But here you just have, you know, they could be Chechenian rebels. You don't know what they are. They're wearing camouflage. They're wearing masks. They don't have name tags. They don't have license plates. Why in God's name are we doing anything they say?
It's another bizarre situation where ICE agents don't necessarily, under federal law, have to display identification or provide badge numbers or identify themselves during any kind of enforcement.
Hang on. So what's going to stop me from going out there and saying I'm an ICE agent then? How would they? You know, that's a great idea. When there's an ICE raid going on, you're already dressed up and you're camouflaged and mask, you just blend in. How are they going to know you don't belong there? They can't see your face either. And then you just basically direct everybody to freedom somewhere. I'm joking. Don't do that. It's dangerous. But think about it.
Yeah, it's bizarre to me why, or even frankly how, they remain exempt from the identification requirements that most commonly would apply to local police, or really almost any kind of law enforcement officer as well. So it's like they're in some kind of special category or case because they may be endangered. This is the perception that, you know, they're so fragile, we can't allow them to have badge numbers or identify themselves. But really, to go back to your, I think, almost rhetorical question here, Emmanuel, there really is nothing preventing anybody from impersonating an ICE officer. Who knows, maybe they have some kind of safe word or code word or something like that when they're on their raid so that they can identify each other. But, you know, right now, I think there may be some kind of internal guidance with respect to ICE that states that they should identify themselves when they're making some kind of arrest, when it's safe to do so. But in reality, there's no way to compel them to do so. There's no standard. There's no transparency. And there's really no accountability. That's really what this is all about. I think that these standards are designed to ensure that there is no accountability.
If the law is on your side, you know, if you're in the right, why would you want no accountability? Why would you want to just, you know, sidestep that?
Well, nobody wants accountability, Emmanuel. Nobody wants people like us asking questions about them, or reporters asking what they've done, or these, you know, nosy people on the street, or the public. For God's sakes, what if the public really knew what they were up to? I mean, this would be terrible, wouldn't it? I mean, accountability is a very powerful thing, quite frankly, right? You know, and I think that there are a lot of members in Congress who, if they had the right information and were empowered to do so, would be asking more difficult questions, would be asking the right questions, and we would have more accountability. But we don't have the information, we don't have the names, we don't have the badges, we don't have really any information about these particular raids, when they're happening. And therefore, it becomes even more difficult, I think, to request information under laws like the Freedom of Information Act. So the ability of the public to force some kind of measure of accountability, even way after the fact, like a FOIA request would, is severely curtailed.
Well, now, what kind of right do you have if, say, you know, a cop gives you a ticket to know the name of that cop? It's on the ticket, right? So I assume somewhere it's written that you have the right to that information. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think it's mostly codified, likely in local laws, that police have to identify themselves. I'm not entirely sure of the exact legal authority there, but that's my understanding, is that police generally have to identify themselves, and they willingly do so. They wear numbered badges, I would say, most of the time. And that makes accountability much, much easier.
So if that's what law enforcement is expected to do, and ICE is purporting to be law enforcement, are they not compelled to identify themselves? Are we not compelled to get that information if we need to?
Well, how do you mean by compel? What's the
demanding drive? Filing whatever kind of paperwork, you know, writing Chuck Schumer strongly worded letters. I don't know, something, but we are entitled to know who these people are, I think.
But these agents aren't acting as though they are civil servants. This is a removal operation. It's like an operation.
They're claiming to be law enforcement. They're treated the same way and given the same protections. So they should follow the same rules.
Alex? Well, I guess maybe there's analogies to be made to perhaps undercover officers here. So, I mean, obviously undercover officers in local law enforcement don't necessarily have to identify themselves. Maybe that's the analogy that ICE is making for itself. But really, the only way to change this would be to enact some kind of federal law. If Congress were able to pull itself together and enact a law that required this type of accountability and identification, that would be one way of doing it. Another way would be for DHS itself to engage in some kind of rulemaking or internal agency policy, ICE itself, or an overall DHS mandate that all of its law enforcement officers, and remember, there's lots of law enforcement officers in DHS, not just ICE, there's Homeland Security investigations as well. I mean, even, you know, TSA, I guess, could be considered law enforcement officers in many respects. So perhaps an overarching rule coming down from DHS on high about the identification of its law enforcement officers could have the same intended effect.
Yeah, I think it's this operation, or the type of order they're working under, and the way they're I think the way they're able to do this is it's sort of an extension of a certain type of action to remove people or otherwise carry out these kinds of immigration like execute these actions. And the rub, I think, is that it's being deployed as a matter of course in under the auspices of sort of regular police activity, whereas the permission to obfuscate and hide and do all this sneaky stuff is under this sort of umbrella of a special certain circumstance, like you said, undercover or a special investigation. Well, it isn't so special when it's across the board every day, everywhere we look. So I do agree. There has to be some sort of codification if they want to so normalize it, right?
Yes, there is. And in fact, I'm just looking this up right now. There is, in fact, something that was introduced in the Senate called the Visible Identification Standards for Immigration-Based Law Enforcement Act of 2025.
I could live with that. That sounds very specific.
Yes, which of course stands for visible. They used, the acronym for visible here. Senator Alex Padilla and 14 co-sponsors. Senator Alex Padilla introduced that along with 14 co-sponsors, and the bill aims to amend the Immigration Nationality Act to require federal immigration enforcement officers, including those from ICE and CBP, to display visible identification badges. So exactly what we're saying is, in fact, before Congress right now. So I think we're onto something. I think they're onto something. Whether this has a snowball's chance in hell in getting to the president's desk without being vetoed and actually signed, I think is another story, though.
Well, he's never going to sign it. We know that. The only hope is if it's able to be overridden. But at this stage, we don't even know if there are the votes to carry something so elementary as this. And it just makes you conclude that, there really is no Congress anymore. It's just a rubber stamp agency. Go ahead, Gila.
I mean, I think, excuse me, there's very little Congress anymore. But I think there's also a question of, even if a law gets passed, gets signed, becomes a law, what kind of enforcement is there? There is this significant reluctance to listen to laws being enforced. It's all very much, well, we're not doing anything wrong. And even if these laws are enacted, who's to say that anybody's going to follow them? You know, I guess it's hard for me not to just throw up my hands, because it's very clear that people are going to do what they want to do. And I suppose it always brings me back to, you know, we keep saying that in a lot of ways, every accusation is an admission. And for years, it was like, we don't need new laws because people who break laws aren't going to pay attention to the laws anyway. So there's no point in making them. There's no point in limits on gun ownership, for example, because if somebody wants to kill someone with a gun, they're going to find a way to get a gun, even if the law says you can't buy one within 48 hours of a background check or what have you. And yeah, every accusation is an admission. We're looking for the opportunity to go and do whatever it is, regardless of what the structure of the law may be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that logic that they use, you can use that to justify not having any laws at all, not to, you know, if only criminals are going to commit crimes, then yeah, they're still going to commit crimes, even if there's a law against it, there still should be a law against the crime. That makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I think, you know, the throwing up your hands, that is exactly what we are expected to do. That is the desired outcome. And when we give up, when we don't have a means of actually fighting this and insisting on our rights, well, then they have won and they have changed the way that we think. And that is the ultimate goal. You know, we say they're going to do what they're going to do. Well, so are the people. The people are going to do what they're going to do to preserve democracy, to preserve their freedom. And I think if it's a given that this information is going to get out, whether through hacking, yes, I got there, or through a leak of one sort or another, that's something that we should expect, because just sitting back and tolerating what's happening now, that is something that should not be acceptable under any circumstance. Kyle?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of room for experimentation, and people that go to these actions, I don't think necessarily all need to be holding a sign or out there on the front, there's many people that can observe and I think fill in a role for gathering information on just how leaky these sorts of operations are. There's a lot of ways to sense who is there, the same ways that they would do this with a protest group. I think the same tools should be implemented to just see how noisy, how big of a footprint do these forces have when they show up. And there are all kinds of tools. People are already recording the sort of silhouettes of these people that are arresting people. So how long does it take to process a lot of that imagery and use like the myriad of image search and other tools
we were talking about this the other day
to cross-reference and do our own sourcing of like who it is.
We were talking about this the other day. Is there technology that can see through these masks and start to figure out who these people actually are? Yeah, it sounds evil, but we're dealing with evil. And information is our friend. Knowing what exactly we are dealing with out there, knowing who the people are that are putting on these outfits and terrorizing neighborhoods, I think that's important to know. I think it's important to try and stop that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like every wavelength, visual, every bit of it, you could capture and you know, provide. And I think that should be the promise from the public in the interest of accountability, is that if you do not volunteer this as per the legislation we've put up, we promise that this will be made available by other means.
This is exactly it.
That's the empowerment.
We need to make that promise and say, we will get this information. ICE, you can't hide your identities. You can't just anonymously raid neighborhoods and intimidate people. If what you are doing is justified, then I think most people will support it, i.e. getting criminals off the street. That was the original intent, wasn't it? And if it's not, then you'll be held to account. But either way, we will find the information. You know, we can't say exactly how at this point, I don't think, but I do believe that developments of technology can be used in both directions,
well, the
both
best,
against us and against them, and, you know, to the advantage of individual people.
The ways that work will go unspoken until the information is had, right? Like, you're not going to talk about what will work in advance of actually getting the information. So, yeah, eventually, one or the other combination of these things, it's not that hard. They are existing in space, showing up on people's blocks, doing this to them. So,
and they're not the smartest people either. So, you know, it'll be pretty, it won't be that much of a challenge,
that's
I don't
what
think.
I mean, that's what I mean by experimentation. Like, come on.
And there are databases and spreadsheets everywhere just waiting to be shared. And, yeah, it has to be done. I don't really see any other way. Although, you know, you can't just wait for somebody to enact legislation, because we see what happens. Even something as basic as don't send U.S. citizens to countries they have never been to as punishment for demonstrating against ICE or something like that. If that's what we're dealing with, then we have to up the ante as well. Yes, Alex, then we're going to move on.
Yeah. One comparison I think we should make here is with the FBI. I mean, who do you think has a more dangerous job? Would you think an FBI agent has a more dangerous job,
yes,
or an ICE agent?
I believe an FBI agent absolutely has a more dangerous job.
And why would you say that?
Well, because they're involved in all kinds of things, organized crime and terrorism and just a lot of things. And they're showing their face every day. They're doing the job the way the job is supposed to be done. I can't believe I'm standing up for the FBI. But, you know, when it comes down to comparing it to ICE, yeah, it's a world of difference.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you here as well. And FBI agents really are supposed to identify themselves when they're making an arrest. In fact, really, they have to identify themselves when they're making an arrest or conducting any kind of law enforcement action. The idea behind that is because it ensures transparency, it allows for legitimacy, and it protects the constitutional rights of the persons that they are arresting, because they know who's there. There's accountability. And in fact, it's been found that, you know, failure to identify yourself as an FBI agent when conducting an arrest could actually be a Fourth Amendment violation.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we justify that? On the one hand, where FBI agents are supposed to identify themselves in nearly every situation, they don't have to, of course, if they're undercover or if revealing their identity would compromise their safety in some way. But how do we square an FBI agent being required to identify themselves and carry identification and show it, while we don't require the same of an immigration and customs enforcement officer?
It's impossible. It's impossible. You cannot square that. You just have to avoid the subject and never be held accountable. That's the way around that. But let me tell you, you know, if Agent Cooper were an ICE agent, Twin Peaks would never have been a hit. Okay, there's a reason for these things. I want to read a letter. This is from Kevin. I tried calling during your YouTube overtime show, which, by the way, follows us at 8 o'clock tonight, channel 2600. I kept reaching voicemail, and that does happen. We only have one phone line. I wanted to mention to Joshua Aaron, who we had on last week, who is the author of the IceBlock app that is used to warn people about ICE raids going on within 5 miles. He wanted to bring up a few additional points that he can make when encountering criticism of his app. If you think the ideas are helpful, perhaps you can pass them along to him. We're going to read them, and you know, maybe he'll hear that, or maybe someone will get word out. There's no way for me to offer suggestions through his app, only tech support complaints, and I might not get through to him personally even if I join Blue Sky. All right. One incontestable justification for the app is that ICE agents operate unpredictably and in openly disruptive ways. This can present a problem for people in cars who don't want to encounter delays on the way to important things like doctor's appointments. So they need to know where to avoid driving in order to not be delayed by ICE taking over a street, something they won't necessarily learn from Waze. Another similar reason is that these things come out of nowhere. These thugs come out of nowhere, wearing masks, carrying weapons, often out of uniform and with no identification. So they can appear to be a gang of criminals to most people, including to local police officers who may quickly respond with their own weapons to what appears to be an abduction or robbery. And, you know, that makes me wonder, are the cops tipped off? Do they know this is ICE, or are they as in the dark as everybody else? It's a decent question. The IceBlock app, therefore, additionally helps its users avoid being in the wrong place at the wrong time, where they might be shot in the crossfire. No matter what, we are all justified in wanting to know or report what can be seen happening in public while we ourselves are on the same street. And it's truly unbelievable that the Trump administration is condemning Joshua, condemning the app, making all kinds of accusations just for saying what is happening on a public street. Continuing here, there's nothing wrong with wanting there to be accountability for how our tax dollars are being used for these ICE operations or for anything else our government does. And finally, as for people being offended by comparisons of Trump with Hitler, hey, even Hitler himself wasn't Hitler when he first rose to power. What Trump and his MAGA team are saying and doing is what Hitler said and did in his early days. It took some years before Hitler went further and did things like murder 6 million people in concentration camps. So, of course, Trump right now is no more Hitler than Hitler was for a while. But this time we must stop a great evil before it's too late. And that means calling it out for what it is and not being afraid of criticism that the warning is premature. Thank you, Kevin, for that letter. And, you know, every dictator, every fascist, they go down different roads. So you don't know exactly what road this will go down. It might be something completely new. It might be something that's been done 1,000 times before. But the important thing is to be honest, to speak out, to say something while you can. And that's what we will continue to do here on Off the Hook, here on WBAI, and dare I say, here in New York City. Alex.
I think the listener in writing in and bringing up these points is raising a really interesting issue here, because to my mind, I don't know, and I invite the listeners to call in during overtime or to write to us about this, but I have never heard of local law enforcement intervening to stop an ICE raid. I would imagine that something like this could potentially happen, though, in sanctuary cities where ICE raids are ongoing. And I think that there is great potential for some clash like this to happen in the near future. I think it would be really quite chaotic to see local law enforcement squaring up against federal officials to protect their own citizens, to protect their own denizens of a local city. And, you know, this is not beyond the realm of possibility right now. And it's really a sort of terrifying prospect.
Also, though, I believe I mentioned this last week, if police really want to be treated like heroes, they need to act like heroes and protect their people from things like this. It may come to that. It would be unprecedented, but it could come to that. And so many things have been changing lately that, you know, but, you know, this scenario that you mentioned makes me think of a different scenario where a group of people that is armed to the hilt and even has, you know, their own military vehicles, they could easily stage a fake ICE raid and get away with it. How would you know the difference? You know, in some backwoods part of the country, or even, you know, in some major city, somebody could do something like that and maybe even lie and say they're ICE. And if the cops don't know, the cops don't know. And God knows where they wind up taking people. Gila? Gila, you're muted.
Sorry, let's try that again. I actually just found an article from Ms. Magazine, actually, titled "Men Are Impersonating ICE to Attack Immigrant Women. MAGA Emboldened Them." There are stories about women being attacked, robbed, raped by men dress up as ICE agents, even if they're not. In Maryland, in North Carolina, in Brooklyn. And because they don't know where to go. Apparently, in Brooklyn, New York, a man told a 51-year-old immigrant woman that he was an ICE agent. She says he attempted to rape her, and he took her phone, purse, and jewelry at the time of publication, which was last week. He has not yet been arrested. People are, again, beginning to dress up as ICE agents and commit all kinds of crimes.
Quick question. Why are we assuming this person wasn't an ICE agent?
That's also very fair.
Just give me the evidence. You know, how do I know he's not an ICE agent?
True. No, it's nearly impossible to distinguish between real and fake agents.
You see, ICE, you know, identification, being forthright with what you're doing, it helps you too. Otherwise, you're going to be accused of every single crime that takes place by somebody with a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it, Kyle.
I just heard in the conversation that this is an example of where we need to be more cohesive and more in agreement. If the tides are truly shifting, if the American populace writ large is itself fed up with this kind of action and the means with which are being used to do this kind of to accomplish this political goal. Without sorts of checks and balances or any kind of redress in government, then I think police forces will be much more likely to stand up for their populace if it's not seen as so polarized. In other words, in being divided, we actually we put the civil servants in that awkward position. Whereas if there is if we're in agreement as a citizenry, they have a lot less interest in serving a sort of feigned political end.
Yeah.
If the lion's share of people say, what's going on? You're supposed to be protecting us. These are our cities. These are our localities. Do your job. That's a different posture. And if other civil servants support local police in those actions, I'm talking city leadership, even down to other public safety offices, if they act in solidarity in the interests of the public they serve, they, I think, would have they would take a look at their legal authorities and maybe exercise some things they haven't thought of in the current moment. So
yeah.
when the winds shift and if the populace is saying our streets are not protected because of federal agents, I think that's a different tenor. You're calling upon your local leadership to defend the state, defend the city, and do a job that a large cross section of their taxpayers, if you just want to look at money, but of their people want, and they will do the will of the people, even if there is no redress in politicians or in state politics or something. The people's voice matters, and if a civil servant truly feels their city isn't being protected, or has the sense that they're not meeting the moment because there's everybody and their kid sister, everybody, you know, at the barbecue, and you know, and their off moments, no matter how far out of town they're from, is telling them this is wrong. They might take, like I said, they might take a look and see what's in their toolbox to maybe at least slow things down a little bit and have the kind of oversight that's needed.
I would, you know, this brings to mind, I'd like to see a different scenario play out when there's, say, a demonstration against ICE in a city, that it not necessarily move on to something at night where people are fighting the police. You know, I'm not for a second discounting the problems that police pose and the many things that they have done wrong. But I'm asking if we can just look at things a little bit differently and say, what if it played out so that the police, as you were saying, protected those people from ICE, from these federal agents that are swooping into their towns? And it wasn't a given that this protest in the daytime is going to turn into fighting the cops at night. How about fighting with the cops to keep these people the hell out of our city or village or whatever it is that they're invading? Because what they are doing is they're tearing apart our day-to-day lives. They're kidnapping our neighbors, whether they have the right papers or not. That's not what people care about. They care about getting criminals off the street. They care about, you know, feeling like they can live safely without being swooped up by one person or another. I just wonder if we'll ever get to that stage where we're fighting a common enemy instead of fighting each other.
I think we can, but we cannot do it with the appearance of being divided, or actually letting national politics divide us locally. Like that really, it makes the perception of actions like that become a polarized issue. Like, oh, only those people are out on the streets. Well, if everyone is out doing something collectively, then I think it can't be cast as something that is anomaly. I think this is actually being called for.
This is something that has included people from all different political backgrounds, and I think that's where the hope is. A lot of people are upset seeing the guy at the deli be taken away. The guy has been there for 30 years, who hasn't committed a single crime, who has done nothing but help the community. People on the left and the right are upset by that. That's not what they voted for. And this whole Epstein thing, seeing how people are reacting against that cover-up, that gives me hope as well, that maybe, you know, at least to get the darkest part of whatever is happening today out of our lives, you know, maybe there is a chance that we can unite on that. I want to just touch upon one other story before we run out of time, which we're going to do very soon. And again, you can join us and on YouTube, channel 2600, or the link that's on 2600.com at the top of the page. We take calls. We talk more. Starts at 8 o'clock. And next week is our monthly call-in show here on WBAI, where we'll be taking phone calls between 7 and 8. So mark that on your calendar as well. But mobile network anomalies consistent with cell phone surveillance were detected at a July 4th protest at an Immigration and Customs Enforcement field office in Washington State. Those anomalies, according to an independent analysis by this news agency, because I've seen this story about 50 times, Straight Arrow News, never heard of them before, but that's what I'm reading this from, suggests that a device known as an IMSI catcher may have been used to collect identifying information on cell phones at the protest site. ICE did not respond to requests, because they never do, for comment. It's not clear whether ICE or any other law enforcement agency obtained a warrant to use an IMSI catcher, commonly referred to as a stingray, to conduct surveillance. do we think that they would go through channels? You know, they're above the law. They'll do whatever they want. The ICE field office in Tukwila, Washington, which is a Seattle suburb, has been the site of repeated protests over Trump's immigration policies. When an estimated 200 protesters gathered outside the facility on June 14th, local police officers used pepper spray.